Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is Monday, February 27th, 2023. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. Or if anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions into questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. That's plural, questions. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab, top right-hand side of our website. You can also support us by purchasing the books, Government by Consent and Court Access in the Common Law. You can find them on the right-hand side of our website. Also, join our campaign for constitutional sheriffs. You can find that on our front page or on the right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up on our scripture reading where we were last week. We're in the book of Galatians, we'll be looking tonight at chapter 5, read by Alexander Scorby. Galatians chapter 5.
Chapter 5. Stand fast, therefore, in the liberty wherewith Christ hath made us free, and be not entangled again with the yoke of bondage. Behold, I, Paul, say unto you, that if ye be circumcised, Christ shall profit you nothing. For I testify again to every man that is circumcised, that he is a debtor to do the whole law. Christ is become of no effect unto you, whosoever of you are justified by the law, ye are fallen from grace. For we through the Spirit wait for the hope of righteousness by faith. For in Jesus Christ neither circumcision availeth anything, nor uncircumcision, but faith, which worketh by love. Ye did run well. Who did hinder you that ye should not obey the truth? This persuasion cometh not of him that calleth you. A little leaven leaveneth the whole lump. I have confidence in you through the Lord that ye will be none otherwise minded. But he that troubleth you shall bear his judgment, whosoever he be. And I, brethren, if I yet preach circumcision, why do I yet suffer persecution? Then is the offense of the cross ceased. I would they were even cut off which trouble you. For, brethren, ye have been called unto liberty. Only use not liberty for an occasion to the flesh, but by love serve one another. For all the law is fulfilled in one word, even in this, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. But if ye bite and devour one another, take heed that ye be not consumed one of another. This I say then, walk in the Spirit, and ye shall not fulfill the lust of the flesh. For the flesh lusteth against the Spirit, and the Spirit against the flesh. And these are contrary the one to the other, so that ye cannot do the things that ye would. But if ye be led of the Spirit, ye are not under the law. Now the works of the flesh are manifest, which are these: adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lasciviousness, idolatry, witchcraft, hatred, variance, emulations, wrath, strife, seditions, heresies, envyings, murders, drunkenness, revelings, and such like, of the which I tell you before, as I have also told you in time past, that they which do such things shall not inherit the kingdom of God. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance. Against such there is no law. And they that are Christ's have crucified the flesh with the affections and lusts. If we live in the Spirit, let us also walk in the Spirit. Let us not be desirous of vain glory, provoking one another, envying one another.
Okay, Jan, do we have any questions today or any announcements?
We have a whole bunch of questions, John.
Okay,
where do we start? Some of these are fairly long, unfortunately. When we, the people, restore our control of our government, How would issues that affect others be dealt with, such as 1, water rights, whiskey's for drinking, water's for fighting? It seems to me that we should have the right to use the groundwater under our owned property as we deem best, that is, freely irrigating to grow food and livestock without registering with or reporting meter readings to and paying fees for water conservancy districts. In my particular situation, that would affect cities like Las Vegas. But what gives them the right to build a city in the middle of a desert and demand that my water usage be controlled so that they can build grand fountains, irrigate lush golf courses, and flush millions of toilets?
Well, I don't necessarily have an answer for that one as far as a conclusion is concerned. So, you know, I do know that there are certain areas, like you just spoke of, that are problematic, especially building a city in the middle of a desert, and then doing what they have to do to get water there and affecting other people and causing some other problems that I'm not familiar with or aware of. We don't have that problem here on the East Coast, at least not where I'm at in New York. Many people have wells and different things. Some people are hooked into shared water, maybe coming out of the river or whatever the case may be. Again, I don't have a solution. These are problems that have to be dealt with by the people that are living in those areas. And they can deal with this quite effectively if they can come together and sit down and think about what the problem exactly is and what is the potential solution, and then execute it. And that can only be done, to, as far as I can see, through committees of safety. Because the only way you can have government by consent is through committees of safety. The only way you can control your government is through committees of safety. The only way you can even control your courts is through committees of safety. Committees of safety control everything. You can control your schools, any of the boards of anything, board of elections, the board of education, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, again, those are unique problems to people in different areas. I do know water, they claim, is going to be a major problem in the future. I can only suspect on some of the reasons why that might be. I don't know necessarily that it's going to be a problem anymore with the way things are going and where we're going to end up after devolution. But nevertheless, there are certain problems. I think fracking, from what I can understand, and I've heard, you know, different things, so I'm kind of back and forth on it, but I'm mostly resting on the idea that fracking is not a good thing, that fracking destroys a lot of the water, different water tables and water systems for people, that they're, you know, poisoning their water because of the different things that they pump into the ground in order to get that expansion for fracking. So, these kind of issues have to be dealt with on all issues have to be dealt with on a grassroots level. And people in certain counties that have the same problem with other counties, you know, I'm sure they can identify that. And those counties should be working together. I'm talking about the county's committees of safety in order to take control of the people that they've elected and put in place to make these decisions, whether it be on the state level or the federal level, or even the local level, of course. So, again, I guess that's about the best answer I can give. I don't have a solution for that, again, because I'm not very familiar with that kind of a problem. Next question.
Okay, this is a similar thing, but pertains to wild game management. Shouldn't we have the right to harvest wild game to feed our families without a license from the state? Realizing that all rights come with responsibilities, wouldn't abuse of such rights be better dealt with through common law courts than by government agencies?
Well, again, you know, different things in states particularly control certain things and the wildlife and what goes on. It can be a problem. I know with deer hunting, for instance, you know, if there's a lot of deer out there, they allow you to catch so many deer, shoot so many deer. If it's really a shortage, you know, you're going to be less or maybe one or whatever the case may be. So that has to be watched. We have to keep that balance. And in some areas, you know, that are very rural and you know, there may not be much of a problem about worrying about, you know, killing off too much of a particular species of animals that you might be hunting. So again, we get back to these problems and situations. If it is a problem, then again, this is a solution that only the committees of safety can solve. Only the people can solve these problems. And again, I go back to the committees of safety because it's the only way we can have government by consent. I know of no other. And if anybody does know of any other, I'd like to hear about it. But I haven't heard about it for the years that we've been teaching committees of safety. So again, I guess certain problems, if there's something that's too strict, too much enforced, that's not righteous, the people have to deal with that and take care of that problem. Again, we're supposed to have government by consent. This is the business of the people. And if the people aren't willing to do the business of the people, then we'll just end up back to where we're trying to get away from right now, because it's just a matter of time. Next question.
I am a fairly new member working through the foundation studies, and I was so inspired by Patrick Henry's words, I had never heard the entire speech. This lit a light bulb of an idea to promote National Liberty Alliance on Brighty on TV. I want permission to create an account for NLA and upload and share some of the inspirational videos I've seen in this training. In today's world, everyone needs to hear your messages of hope. Brighteon is free, created by a wonderful man named Mike Adams, otherwise known as the Health Ranger. And I think NLA could use a little more exposure.
Well, I think NLA can use a lot more exposure. It's up to the people here that come and listen and participate, and some people get involved, some people listen, learn, and are educating themselves. We hope everyone is educating themselves. But it's up to the people to get the word out. We put a lot of material out there. We put a lot of things up on, Rumble. We used to use YouTube, but we can't use that anymore. Rumble, we've been setting things up there. Our website has a tremendous amount of information. It also has a whole bunch of information concerning, on our website. You can come to our Monday night open forum videos, for instance, and you can click on that. And there are certain videos here. And again, you know, people can share the links to these videos. They can take these videos and they can also post them up on their own website, where people can watch them right off their own website. Again, these videos, we put quite a few videos up here. We got lots of videos throughout a whole website anyway. It's not just this page, but this has been a certain nights, Monday night programs, we put things up here. And again, like I said, we have our Rumble page, and I'm going to start posting probably a video a week up on Rumble. Now, if anybody wants to kind of design things and put things together and be helpful in a way to kind of get our message out, we'd love to, have them come help us. Contact Jan on that and let them know what you're looking to do, what you want to do, and put the material together, and let's get together. We'll let the national leadership get together and take a look at the material and how it's put together and put an approval forward for it. And I'm sure pretty much anything that anyone puts together, especially if they're tapping into the information on this website, which covers tremendous amounts of information, not just the stuff that we create and put together, but, even our raw material. We have other teachers and other videos that we share on our website that we don't mind getting the information out. Of course, we have the Federalist Papers and different things. Anything you want to share on this website, we're all for that and to get the word out. So anyway, anybody that wants to volunteer in any way that they can even, there's lots of things that we need help with, and there is lots of things we haven't even thought of that people could maybe think of and say, hey, why don't you do this or why don't you do that? Maybe we can get more donations this way or maybe we can get the word out that way. Whatever it takes, and we do of course need the donations, because without the donations we can't exist. It costs money to run all these things that we do run, but in any event, you know, anybody who wants to help and get the word out, we're all for it. Any of our material can be just taken off and shared. Any of our videos should be shared by using the embed links. You can go, all of our videos that we put up pretty much are up on Rumble. So you can go to our Rumble site, which you'll find on the right-hand side of our website. If you come down here, let's see how far down it is. Yeah, here's our Rumble page. We still have one of our, looks like video, I got to check on YouTube. We still have, I think, one of our accounts on video on YouTube still up, but we're not putting anything new up here. But anyway, here's a whole bunch of different videos that could be shared, and they can be linked to, again, embedded on any website. But as far as our materials is concerned, we have lots of handbooks. You can share them. We don't want them to be distributed from another website. We would, but to, to run it off because they're PDFs and use them, of course, for sure. Maybe, of course, run a couple of copies off to go to a meeting and to, pass them out. That's all fine. Get in touch with Jan, anybody who wants to participate in any way on a national level and working with us in any way possible. We need help. All right, next.
Okay, I tried to ask a question on last Monday's call, but several people ahead of me did not respect others being in the queue and the time ran out. My question is, I am working on my affidavit for the court case to the Supreme Court. If I do not have all the actors in that, okay. If I mention the offices involved with my case, I ask because some of the actors have changed since this case began.
Okay, so I guess what they're trying to do is link the case onto our case?
It sounds like that, John, but it doesn't specifically.
Yeah, at this point, anybody that wants to link their case onto our case, it should always be, at this point, it should be done by affidavit, and that's what that individual, I think, was talking about. So by affidavit, remember, we're all casualties of war, ultimately, and we've all been injured. We've lost a lot just in our own lifetimes, just in through inflation and the inability to do certain things that we would like to have done, and maybe create a better business, make more money, and have a better life, and so on and so forth. And it's all been robbed from us. So we're all, casualties of war. The Revolutionary War, as far as I'm concerned, and as far as I can see, it's clear in my mind, the Revolutionary War has never ended. It just went covert. Now it is being revealed. Now it's becoming overt. And we're seeing the destruction. The minions of the New World Order, which is the Bar Association established here in the colonies back in 1750, for the sole purpose is to destroy our common law law in America. We had common law prior to the Constitution. We were under common law, and the king was having some problems with many of the patriots here in the colonies, and so that he couldn't get any convictions or anything, couldn't get any indictments on people. So they sent the Bar Association. I would presume the Bar Association was also intact in England, and they used, that was used, of course, to bring them their civil law. And that's what the Bar Association did, is they subverted our Constitution. They subverted our courts of justice. They brought us under civil law. They've totally annihilated our Bill of Rights. If you think you have a Bill of Rights, if you think you have any unalienable rights when you go into a courtroom in a situation where the government is coming out after you, well, you're being fooled, because you don't have. They're not going to uphold your rights there. I've seen way too many times people's rights are not adhered to. They just don't care. And, a lot of lawyers are true believers that we're under Roman law, we're under civil law. They don't even know how we even got there. And they think it's a good thing. They're not taught to think. They're not taught how to think. They're taught what to think, like most doctrinal educations, unfortunately, in many of the areas. And there's a lot of poison out there in all of the different subjects matters that I guess you'd look at too. But particularly, we look at the law. It's totally been annihilated. Law and equity has been totally destroyed and is no longer in play. It just appears to be in play. But when you find yourself in a court because the government is coming out after you for whatever reason, you're going to lose it all. And you'll also find a jury that you won't, you'll find a tainted jury is what you'll find. And under very rare conditions, someone in the jury maybe has an epiphany or an understanding or a realization and then brings the attention of, you know, the power of the people to the other people in that jury, and then you can get a good decision because then they decide they're going to make the decision on both law and facts. And all juries at this point are poisoned. One of the things they try to do when they get a jury is they want to know. They ask one of the questions I believe they ask, and you know, we're going to be looking at that in our course, but one of the questions that they ask is concerning you know, their attitude towards the law as far as common law is concerned. And there's kind of different ways they might ask that question. They don't ask it directly, but they're really trying to see if you're going to be a problem jurist and you're going to get in the way of them getting their conviction, because that's what they're there for. At all costs, they want their conviction. There's money made in that to begin with. You're a problem maybe to someone, and that's why you're in court. You know, and there's all kinds of things. So it's problematic, you know. Can you just reread that question real quick? Because I'm not sure I actually answered it.
Okay. I'll skip the first part. My question is, I'm working on my affidavit for the court case to the Supreme Court. If I do not have all the actors, is that okay if I mention the offices involved with my case?
Yeah, you know, you should try to get the names of all the people in there, because, you know, it could be a problem trying to get back later. But it's only an affidavit, so you can always update it. Again, restitution is coming to everyone, but specifically people who have been injured in other ways, they have to be restored. And there's going to be plenty of money ultimately to restore people, because, you know, as Trump has said many times, when a robber comes in and steals the diamonds from a diamond store and he gets caught, got to return the diamonds. Well, all of this, all of these riches and resources that all of these individuals have, and it's in the trillions and trillions and trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars, it's going to be taken back because it's not theirs. They stole it. And the people will benefit from that. And so that's one thing. But, yeah, as far as you should try to get all of the names in. And you know, I get papers all the time. Sometimes I don't even know what to do with them. I can't read through cases. People send me cases. I don't have time to read through a case. I'm too busy doing what I'm doing. Sometimes people will send. I have recently got a couple of affidavits. I set them aside. But people are not telling me why they're sending me an affidavit, so I don't know what they're doing. If someone wants to add their case through affidavit to our case, then you have to tell me. You know, you can send it in an email, that's fine, and attach it. But you have to tell me, you know, this you'd like to attach to our case, and then we know what to do with it. Other than that, I don't know what to do with it. I'm not going to attach papers to our case that I don't have the instructions to do so. So you have to be more specific. Anyway, I think I got that one. What's next?
Okay, it says in 18 U.S.C. 2385 that it is against the law to overthrow the government. Mm-hmm. But I look at the Declaration of Independence, and it says I have a duty to do so when the government has become destructive. Can the government use 18 U.S.C. against me if I am using the Declaration of Independence as my basis?
Well, we write our papers very clearly on that fact coming in that, you know, look at when here's the situation. Here's what people don't realize, or a lot of people don't realize, or some people I'm sure do. There is absolutely nothing wrong with our government. Everything that was created is still in place. We have some things that are not constitutional and therefore is null and void. I think that's out of Marbury versus Madison, one of the very first Supreme Court cases. and it's very clear anything that is repugnant to the Constitution is null and void. So there's a lot of things that we can get rid of just by nullification. States can nullify, the people can nullify in courts. We've nullified things as we've gone into courts, certain things to made it to be nullified because they're repugnant to the Constitution. Let me get back to the structure of the government. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the structure of our government. The problem is the criminals that have taken control of our government. There's nothing wrong with the structures of our courts. We built those court systems, for instance, we'll talk about the justice system. We built those courts, okay? We've manned those courts. We pay the salaries of the people in those courts. We put in places different individuals, different officers of the court. Sheriffs are part of the court system. Judges are part of the court system. Again, we've hired them all. We pay them. And a lot of them are criminals. They need to go to jail or end up at the end of a rope, maybe. That's for a jury to decide. But nevertheless, that's all ours. The process is still good. The procedures are still good. A lot of their rules are okay. I think a lot of their rules are okay. I think we can use a lot of their rules, and I do, and I'll be teaching that. But some of the rules are problematic, and we have to nullify them. We're not going to use them. We want to come in with a common law process, not with a civil law process. But the problem, again, gets back to the people who are running it. It is the criminals in charge. We've been taken over by criminals. And that's what we're up against. That's what we're fighting. When we speak about, bring up, for instance, at the Declaration of Independence, the right to overthrow or to change things, or to change servants, and that's where we're at, and that's our focus. We want to get rid of these servants and replace them. And that is the power and the authority of the people, and it's in the Declaration of Independence, and you will also find it in other places. But as far as going up against the government, and there is a law, to take over, to go up and destroy the government, to take it over, or whatever the case may be. That is a problem, of course, and we want to be careful not to get lost into that. We're not doing that here at National Liberty Alliance. We want to restore what cannot really have been taken away. We, the people, ordained and established this Constitution for the United States of America. That's what it says. That's the beginning of our Constitution. That's the, in the preamble. And so we ordained it. They had no authority to take away our law and replace it with civil law, which they did under the Rules Enabling Act of 1934. Okay, they had no right to take away our trust or our government, which I think I'd see it as a trust, so to speak. But anyway, take away the trust of our government and turn it into an ink, incorporated it. And they've incorporated every state and almost every county, if not all of them at this point, and towns are incorporated. Everything's incorporated. We're not, that's corporatism. We're not a people of corporatism, which brings us to Nazism, socialism, and all the other isms, ultimately. That's not who we are as a people. We never gave them authority. They did that through the Organic Act of 1871, which was the beginning of their construction of their civil law. That's where it all started. The construction of their civil law started there. Law is constructive. Line upon line, precept upon precept, point by point by point by point. And they've had this all worked out probably 100 years, 200 years, 150 years ago, whatever it is. They've had it worked out for the longest time. And all they did is keep installing little pieces. They install this act, and then so many years later, they get that act in. They don't care who gets into office. They don't care whether it's the criminal on the right or the criminal on the left. And they just move little by little. And they've been constructing a statutory prison for us for over 100 years. And it's time for we the people to step up and take it back. And we do that by getting involved in committees of safety and start organizing ourselves in such a way and getting the subcommittees going to take our educational system back in all the schools within our counties, to take back everything, what goes on in the towns, to put the towns back under the control and the thumb of the people. And we have all that information on how to do that, of course, on our website underneath Start a Committee of Safety, right there. You know, click on that and follow the breadcrumb trail, so to speak. And at the same time, you should be clicking on the education and starting and follow that breadcrumb trail. Get your education, get your knowledge, work together, committees of safety, take back your county, and work with the county next door and the county across the state from you, the county across the nation from you in another state in different issues that affect us here or there. And let's take back this nation and restore our republic. Only the people can save America. Trump said that he was not elected to take power, but he was elected to give power back to the people where it belongs. The problem is that people don't know how to have government by consent. They don't know how to have that power. They don't know how to take it. They have no clue, and they don't have a proper education to be able to even take it and deal with it. But that's what we're teaching here at National Liberty Alliance, and that's what people have to do. They have to get the knowledge. You can't require these people to obey the Constitution if you don't know it. You can't require these people to obey the common law and to bring back laws of courts of justice if you don't know it and you don't understand it. You can't take back your Congress if you don't know when they're violating the Constitution or violating your unalienable rights. Our heritage is natural law, common law, whichever word you want to use. That's what our heritage is, okay? And our inheritance is liberty. And again, if you don't know the law, you don't know your inheritance. You don't know your heritage. You don't know how to take it back. Anyway, next question.
Can you please speak about our rights in the situation of a contract? I have just discovered that the birth certificate is a registration contract with the government. My mother did not know what she was signing, so did not consent, which probably voids the contract. But that does not change the fact that it became a legal entity which the government bought and sold through the Federal Reserve as an asset, and there is the Siskiyou trust number associated with my birth certificate. How do I stop the government from trading on my good name and replace their false document that I am lost at sea with, I am a living woman with rights? I want to have my truthful information on who I am on the record so I can require my birthrights in all interactions with the U.S. Government, Inc. Assuming I am dead, there's no way to live, and I am also not bound in any way to following the laws in place for corporations, as they have also assumed.
Okay, therein is the problem of a lot of teaching that's out there. I know the enemy calls this, you know, the Bar Association and Southern Poverty Law Group there. You know, they call these people sovereign citizens, that sovereign citizen movement. Whatever they call them is irrelevant, and whatever people call themselves, sovereigns or whatever they call themselves, that's irrelevant too. That's not the point. But the point is there's a lot of teaching out there, and if you listen to the question, they're given a lot of information on things that the enemy has done, and they don't have the solution to deal with the problem that the enemy has done. What is the solution, and why don't they have the solution? Well, the solution, the remedy of lawlessness, I know Brent says this all the time, the remedy of lawlessness is the law. The answer is the law. I mean, just first of all, it's a fraud. You had no knowledge of any of these things. Once you understand the law, there is no contract without a meeting of the minds. It doesn't matter, you can have a piece of paper, you can have it signed, but if you can prove that there was never a meeting of the minds, there is no contract, never was. And there's a lot of things you can't put into a contract because once you put things in a contract that's unlawful, okay, then the contract is null and void. If one part of it is null and void, the whole thing is null and void. There is no contract. Those are words. People believe it. They don't know what to do. Everything that these people are teaching, okay, that's running through, and again, I know they don't like to be called sovereign citizens, and I'm not saying that they are, but just for a lack of a better term, to bring it all together, everything that they're teaching has truth to it, okay? But, you know, it gets to a point we don't really need to know all that much information about the enemy. We're better off knowing the information about truth and justice, what is right and what is wrong as far as in a court of justice, and how we can take this back by just executing the true law of the land, which is law and equity. And that's what's in our Constitution, to recognize that they can't enslave us, they can't change the law, they can't do any of these things. Everything they've done is null and void. The whole thing is nothing but fraud, and that's our position when we fight in courts. It's null and void because it's fraud. Now, we don't necessarily win much, we know that, but we're really building a case for the end battle. George Washington lost most of the battles. Maybe a lot of people don't realize that. He didn't win very many battles at all, lost a lot of them. But he won the war, and that's the key. We may be winning, we may be losing a lot of battles. You know, we put in, maybe 100 plus habeas corpuses, and maybe we'd had two through, maybe three. That's it, okay? So we lost most of the battles. We will not lose the war, though. You see, we're building a case, we're proving conspiracy, we're showing that they act and do the same thing, whether they're in California in one county here or a county there, or in New York in a county there, or Texas or Montana. It doesn't matter where they're at. All the judges, they're all doing the same thing. I'm talking particularly about the federal courts, but the state courts are no different. Now, this whole thing, what we've been building, is building a case against them in order to bring it to the point where we're bringing an indictment against the federal judiciary. And that's what we've done with our last paper, is we laid out the case for an indictment against the federal judiciary. We showed the fact that this is a conspiracy and they've worked together, you know, across this entire nation, judge to judge to judge to judge, all doing, saying the same thing to all the people. The non-judicial foreclosures, ignoring habeas corpuses, denying people their due process, putting people in jail and not even giving it. You know, people. Some people go to jail and they haven't even had an indictment. Some without even a trial. You know, a judge has no business trying anyone that's a criminal because they can't. The law, natural law, does not provide for that. It's repugnant to natural law for one individual to make a decision on another in a criminal case. It's repugnant. Even if the person pleads guilty, it's not up to the judge to make any decision. Still got to call a jury. You still got to do an indictment. You still have to have the jury come in and hear all the information. Fine, you want to plead guilty? Give us all the, you know, they give all the information. They ask all the questions. You have all the witnesses. You still have to have a trial. And then the jury makes the decision. Not some judge who's, maintaining the status quo. So again, the solution is in the law, and it's a very simple one on this. There's no meeting of the minds. It doesn't exist. And the other thing, they'll never bring this up in court. It's never going to be used anywhere. It is giving you snapshots of a picture of the fact that they've got you running for the process of becoming a slave at some point in time when they pull that plug, when Obama said in 2016 at the dinner, which was the last dinner, the White House dinner, and I forget what was going on, but he was calling that Hillary Clinton would win, and he said, well, the end of the republic never looked better. Just let those words sink in. And Obama knows we're a republic, doesn't he? Why doesn't Supreme Court judges know that we're a republic? Why doesn't our presidents and our representatives, how come they don't know? They all think we're a democracy. It's repugnant. Our founding fathers were clear. It's repugnant to us. And in any event, he said that the end of the republic never looked better. So slavery is in view, and that's what that's all about. We now know that. And what we need to do now is get the knowledge of the law to deal with the problem. You know, as far as getting our liberty back or being given back to us, that's going to have to, there's no other way to get around it. It's got to be a military movement. It's got to be what Trump is doing, and that's the only way it's going to happen. I can't see any other way other than an all-out, you know, revolution in the streets, and I don't think that's going to happen at all. And then we probably would lose that ultimately because they got the guns. We don't. But once we get there, You know, what are the people going to do if they can't handle it? They need to know how to have government by consent. They just don't know. All right, next question.
Being a living woman, I am entitled to any trial by jury, and without the proper corrections of who I am, they may supersede this right as they have done with my friends. They also assume that my friends' children are orphans, which they are not, when this false status of who she is at present. Please speak on making a record of who I am in truth.
Well, look, it's just very simple. We're one of the people. That's who we are. And as one of the people, you know, we the people established and ordained the Constitution. That's who we are. We're the lawmakers. We're the authority above all laws except natural law. God's above us, and we're under natural law. We have to be obedient to natural law. Natural law is written in the hearts. But as far as any other written law, which is called positive law, it's equity, you know, we control all that. We can nullify any of it at any given time and through the judicial system in the courts. Now, the problem is I am not aware of a free and independent, unadulterated grand or trial jury. I've never seen one. Okay, except for the grand juries that we've run. They don't exist that I've seen. They're all tainted. You go read their handbooks. We've got a copy of their written of the federal grand jury handbook. We've got a copy of the federal petit jury handbook, and it is the entire thing is repugnant from beginning to end. It denies common law. It denies ultimately your unalienable rights. It takes everything away from you. And when we're just exposing that, and we're going to change that, and that's why we've written our own books for handbooks for grand juries and trial juries to liberate them. But, you know, again, there is a way. I know that a strategy that I've put together on trying to bring a good jury together if you're in a court. And that is to really bring the handbook into play through a memorandum or just a reference into your case. And especially if it's a criminal case, you want to get it in there. But any case, if you know you're pushing for a jury case, you know, you're not looking for anything with a simple summary judgment type thing, which, again, you know, we have to be very careful with that. But, you know, you're pursuing a case, it's a court of record, you're going to get a jury. Well, you want to make sure that jury has been properly orientated. and until we get control of that, you want to get that information into your court case. So that's what you have to do. But it's tough. It's rough. And, yeah, they love to take away your children, and they love to take away our parents, too, especially if they have money. They don't want you to have it. They want to have it. And they just totally take everything, and by the time they get to the end of it, there's nothing left for the people. And you can have millions of dollars your parents could have millions of dollars, and once they take everything, you're not going to get any of it once they put their claws into it. So it's a problem. It's a problem, and people who have never been in the courts, they don't know. They don't know what the problem is, so they're totally aware, unaware of it, and, you know, ignorance can be bliss sometimes until you get caught up in it. All right, next.
Can you provide a brief description of the private attorney general? And towards the end of the course, will you provide a discussion and how to pursue and process such a claim?
Well, I don't have much knowledge of private attorney generals, and to my understanding, a private attorney general ultimately is someone who would take over the case of a prosecution instead of the regular prosecutor, and there'd be reasons for that, I would presume. I don't have much knowledge of it. I haven't looked into it. I haven't had any use or need for it. I know people talk about it. And I've talked to people who say that they're, private attorney generals, but they haven't added anything onto me in knowledge of what that means. So I don't know. Maybe if someone who knows about that, maybe they can get on the mic some point in time and tell us a little bit about it. The next question. Well, you know, my question, by the way, my question would be to that person is why would they want to have a private attorney general? For what purpose do they think they need one? I mean, you know, I'm sure there are needs for that from time to time, because, again, my understanding of a private attorney general is someone who takes the place of a prosecutor and the regular normal prosecutor. So, again, I'd like to know what would be needed for, and if anybody is one or knows how, about that, they can come and tell us about it. All right, next question.
Yeah, it sounded like she wanted or he wanted to become one.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, again, I don't know.
I was reading John's response to Anna von Ritt's comments and positions. John indicated his belief that she was attempting to institute a shadow government, to which he was opposed. It seems to me that our entire movement was born out of the deception of what I think we all believe is the current shadow government. We do not have the constitutional republic which the founders established. So what other term can be applied? Moreover, as the characters of the government and in accordance with the founding documents, for example, the Declaration of Independence, we, the creators, have the obligation and duty to fix the creation, which is the government, when it is determined to be broken, yes? Since it is clear that what has been created is no longer, does the act of recreating, i.e. fixing what is broken, constitute the creation of a shadow government?
Okay. Excuse me. I don't like to talk about other people, but this comes up from time to time. Anna von Ritz has made connections with us in the past, and you know, and then after having conversation, we're not compatible. Then, of course, you know, they assault, and if people ask, we have to warn, and then people have to, you know what? If you don't have to believe me, all you have to do is listen, consider it, and then listen to what they're doing and consider it and see once what you think, because truth is self-evident. As long as you don't go in wanting to believe what you want to believe, without the proof yet, get the proof first. But here's the bottom line: is this? Is I've come to the conclusion that Anna von Ritz is a Pied Piper. She is Pied Piper. Some people away from us, and those people, some of those people ended up in jail. One person died in jail, and they were really led away by people in the sovereign citizen movement on the one end, and Anna von Ritz on another end, in another place that you know, she was involved with. And their position, her position ultimately is that the Constitution we have is no good, it's invalid, we need to write a new one. That's her position. And that is a very dangerous position. Our position is we need to restore what our founding fathers put together. That's our position. And it's still there, it's still valid, because no one can break it. You see, we the people ordained and established, we're the top of the whole chain here as far as mankind is concerned. We the people are the top. We are, you know, we're the lawmakers. We're the sovereign. Okay, that is crystal clear in common law. And we made a covenant with God through the Declaration of Independence to live under his law and to receive his blessings in return and to do as we do our best to live under his law. And that was the agreement in the Declaration of Independence, and that's what the people decided. And the preamble to the Constitution is very clear that part of government is to protect the blessings of liberty. Okay, so that's where that's what we're about. That's what we want to reinstate. You'll never get, in my opinion, this is almost an impossibility. For the right people to have come together to put this nation together at the right time, this couldn't have worked without a George Washington. This couldn't have worked without a Thomas Jefferson. This couldn't have worked without a James Madison. This couldn't have worked without a Benjamin Franklin. Remove any one of those individuals, and there's others. It's not all of them. Those are the major ones. You remove any one of those individuals, and America doesn't happen. And, you know, when you look at the debates and what they put together and the papers, I don't see men with the wisdom to be able to do that. I don't trust Anna von Ritz or anybody to be able to write anything anywhere near that. Nor could any, I don't think anything could be put together better than what our founding fathers put together. So they say that that the Constitution is null and void because it's not real, that there was another Constitution that was in 1787, and we're working off the 1789. They don't understand what they're talking about. The 1787 Constitution is the same thing as the 1789, except for there was a few other things added to it because of the Bill of Rights, and that was the thing that Thomas Jefferson and particularly worked with James Madison to press the state, and it got six states, I believe it was six states to refuse to sign that Constitution without a Bill of Rights, and they agreed upon it. So, you know, it's the same paper. Nothing has changed. I've challenged people, show me the different paper. They can't show it to me. They never have. And I've challenged many times for them to show. But the bottom line is they want to rewrite the Constitution. You tell me who's going to rewrite the Constitution. You tell me that's not the enemy working there. Okay? We're about restoring what has already been put together and can work and does work. All right. Next question.
I'm attending the live course to assist myself and eventually, hopefully, others. I know I have a lot to learn and very willing. However, I need to buy myself some time as I have a hearing coming up on March 10th. I believe I need to send a notice and demand for oath and bond to the attorney, prosecutor, and judge. One, if I use the PDF provided for that, is there anything else I need to send with it?
Well, look, at again, you know, I haven't taught enough to be able for anyone, unless they've got some good knowledge of how things work and what's going on and what is the proper paperwork, and I don't know. You know, my first question would be jurisdiction. And first of all, if you want to buy time, okay, and you don't have a lawyer, you contact the judge. You say, look, I don't have a lawyer. I need to get I need to get some counseling. Don't say representation. I need to get counsel. And let him think whatever that means. You know, he'll think that's a lawyer. You're looking for a lawyer. And he'll say, yeah, you should get one. Go get one. And just say you need more time. That's number one. And then if you need, and you could probably get 30 days there. And then you get your 30 days are up and you're still not ready. Well, then you challenge jurisdiction. You get another 30 to 60 days there. Okay, it's going to take time. You got to really stall everything so that you get your education. And I would think after 2 months, even though we may not be done with the course at that point in time, you'll have plenty of the information to know what to do and how to do it, what papers to use and so on and so forth and different strategies. You know, that's all I can say is bite for time. You're not ready to do, again, well, I'm not sure, what did they say want to do, a notice and demand? If they're in court, you don't want to do a notice and demand, you want to do a quo warranto. They both kind of push the same way, okay? One's out of court, one's in court. So that's one thing, but you're not ready for that. So that's another thing you could do to bide for more time. Okay, so you know you tell the judge you need more time because you need counsel. You then write a paper, you know, after those 30 days are up or whatever, you write a paper and you challenge jurisdiction another 30 days. Then after that, if you want and you think it's necessary, you file a quo warranto. Okay, and you're going to get another 30 or 60. You're going to get a lot more than that because you're going to start going up the line. And if you do have a good jurisdiction challenge, which you very well may be, you probably do, you can then start moving that through the appellate process. You remember, the appellate process we can use, and we would use it not for the end of the case, but we would use it throughout the case. You put a motion in, that motion gets denied, you know it's just and right, it shouldn't have been denied. You tell the judge, no, I want a reconsideration. He gets time for that, too. And then he gives you a reconsideration. He's going to come back with the same answer anyway. And then you say, then you appeal it, and the whole system, everything stops. You're not going. We've got to deal with that problem. Okay, it goes up to the appellate system. You could probably buy another 30 days. So there's ways you can stall things out. Lawyers stall things out for money, and they're very easily. They do all kinds of things to stall a case and make more paperwork. And every time there's more paperwork, there's more money involved. They hit their client for more money. It's all about money for them. They don't care who wins the case. They're making money no matter what happens. And at the end of the day, they're gonna obey the will of the judge before they obey, you know, the client. They're gonna be more concerned about their own quote-unquote license that doesn't exist, but a license, and not to, you know, run into trouble with the judge. And the judge knows what's going on. He works with the lawyers to help them make more money, you know. Anyway, I guess that's all I got to say about that.
Okay, there was a second part to that, which said, especially when details may be necessary, is there someone who could review before I mail it?
Which is this? What case?
Well, the
last person?
The person that has an upcoming hearing on the 10th
of
March.
I don't even know what they're doing, and you know, a lot of people ask me to do certain things, and I just don't have the time. I mean, I can't give up the work that I'm doing to work on cases. We did do some things with habeas corpuses, and we did things with non-judicial foreclosures and a few other different issues, but we were able to create some basic paperwork that really worked with everything in the different issues, and to bring it into the system and then eventually, you know, connect it to our case. But we probably, any case we want to connect, we could do it through affidavit. They can make reference to their case and give an affidavit and attach it that way. But, yeah, I don't know that I'd have the time to be able to do that. At least not now, I don't. So I don't, couldn't do it. All right, okay. Next.
Can you clarify what the difference between sovereign, lawful citizen, American state national, and natural person?
Well, we don't need to be a state natural. And, you know, look at that. Again, that's an exercise to take us away from something else. And look at, well, I'm sovereign. That's very clear. Anybody who has a beating heart is a sovereign individual in this. If their feet is on American soil, it doesn't matter who they are, where they're from. If their feet is on American soil, they have all the rights of anyone else in this nation. In other words, because they're under natural law. Now, that there would be exceptions to that, of course, because there are laws. If people come into this country unlawfully, they can't declare that they need a just court that's going to make a decision for them or anything. No, they need to be removed and come into this country lawfully. So I know that that's one of the things that they use to claim for them, but not for us, but for them, that applies. But a state sovereign, I don't know, that's like giving up, in my opinion.
American state national.
National, yeah. Again, to me, that's like giving up, number one. We're the people, we're sovereign, and that's all you need to be, in my opinion. And, you know, you look up those two words, and it's pretty clear. You know, in court, you know, the best way to open a court of record is to say I'm one of the people of the state of, in my case, New York, and in this court of record, I sue. And then you go from there. And right there, you've opened up a court of record. And then you maintain that jurisdiction. And then you require every paper that comes into that court, excuse me, where is the jurisdiction? I don't see it on the top of your paper. Can you please, you know, push it back and please put the jurisdiction in there? You got to force people to put the jurisdiction, and they're gonna vomit over this because they don't know what to do. They wouldn't even know the answer. The judges, they know the answer, and they know the jurisdiction they're playing in. They don't want you to know what it is. It's a jurisdiction that has nothing to do with us. So, again, you know, well, I guess that's all I got to say about that. Was there a third part to that as far as a natural individual?
Well,
a natural person brings us right back to the people, so it's one and the same, the sovereign. All three, the sovereign, the people, the natural, it's all the same, one and the same.
Okay. Why do you consider American state national a dangerous path?
Well, I think it's a path that you've given up, and they claim to be giving up their citizenship. Is that not what they're trying to do? And by giving up your citizenship, you could be deported. I mean, maybe that's part of their game to get you to do that. Who knows? At some point, we'll deport them all. you'll already be on record. It's like the people who go out there to put their thumb or their fingerprint on a record, and they claim it's common law. That's a lie. That's a lie. You know, that was established back in the 1800s, and they saw the Indians doing that using ink or something similar to ink, and using that as a proof of a signature or something, and people picked up on that, and people today claim that's a common law thing. It's not a common law thing. It's a BS thing.
Okay, aren't Anna von Ritz and David Strait teaching the same things or same path?
No, David Strait is teaching what is the problem going on, but the problem is his solution I disagree with, because in my opinion, the solution really is given up. It's given up our nation. It's given up everything back to them and going a different direction. Anna von Ritz is far, far worse of a problem, because she believes that the Constitution is no good, needs to be done away with. Strait does not. Strait agrees that the Constitution is a valid paper. It's powerful.
That's all of the questions, John.
Okay. All right. I guess we'll move over to Q&A if anybody's in the queue. Star 6 and 1 if you're on a phone. I'll take a question or two. I see Gerard's here. Are you ready for me to pass over to you shortly? Gerard?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Oh, by the way, I don't know, is Terry here? No, Terry's not here.
No, she's not tonight.
I saw a message come in from Brent. I think he came through. I don't remember where he came through on that, but he lost. He doesn't have the access number to get in as far as coming in as a host. I don't know if he's in our list somewhere. Someone can, because I don't know what that code is, so maybe Terry could call him, or Jan, maybe you can send him a message in an email or something, what his code would be to get in as a host. Okay. Yeah. All right, Gerard, I'm going to pass things to you in a minute or two. I'll just take maybe the first question, and then I'll take, let me pass it to you now. We'll both take the next question.
I got a question that came in from me, and I want you to be on here because I answered it. I'm pretty sure I answered it correctly. But I want you to do it for everybody out here. Because of this Brenson case, people are all looking at these cases that get thrown out. And Brenson happened to mention that when you go into federal court, there are certain rules and things you have to follow or they won't accept the case. Like he mentioned that the case had to be bound a certain way. And what they told us, he said, did we lose any cases or they didn't give us our due process or whatever because we didn't file it right? And I said, no, that's not the case, because content trumps form. So if you put a case in, and it's not spaced right or it's not bound
but
right.
Do remember this, that content under trumps form under common law, and they don't believe we're under common law. So that's one of the major problems, I think.
So if you put a paper in, and you're representing yourself, you're going in, as sudi juris, whatever you want to call yourself, you're not a lawyer, and they're supposed to correct you, and they're supposed to give you the instructions, and they're supposed to give you time to fix that error. In other words, they can't throw your case out because you didn't space it right. They can, but they have to give you a time to correct it. I do believe that that's what I learned.
Well, that's true. And, and as far as coming in, the best, I think, way to come in is in pro per, in your own person.
Right.
Yeah, that's the best way, in my opinion.
Right. But we've never had a case that didn't get followed through because we didn't have it, in the right form or the right spacing. And if we did have something that was wrong, they always told us, do it this way, right? They've corrected us.
Well, yeah. As far as being prima facie on certain ways, yes. But there are certain things that I just don't want to do their way, and that becomes an argument. And I can see it coming up very soon for us now.
Well, we haven't lost any cases due to our form, our format, or our prima facie.
No, we've only lost cases due to the fact that they want to maintain status quo and not obey the law. And right, they don't exactly. want to obey their own law. They even when we use their law against them, they don't want to obey that. Even when we use their rules against them, they don't want to obey that. That only applies to how they want to use it against us.
Right.
And then they'll make it up as they go, too. They've done that.
And I was going to say, you know, I forget what was that guy's name that was teaching the private attorney general's course.
And yeah, I don't remember, but yeah, there was
he
someone.
He had the gun case in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
He was pretty popular, but, and he gave a course, and then you get a little diploma. But the bottom line is you never become a private attorney general unless a judge appoints you to a particular case, and it has to be in the interest of the population at large for that particular thing. So I don't know that you can just say, I'm a private attorney general. Ultimately, you're appointed by a judge through a court. Now, can you do other things after you get that title? I think you can, to a point. But I don't think it's like people think. You just become a private attorney general, and then you start prosecuting cases. That's not how it works.
Yeah, I have no idea how all that works. But, yeah, I recall
appointed by a judge.
So yeah, that's a probability, and that's a problem, too, isn't it?
That's a big hurdle. You want to get a judge to appoint you private attorney general?
Yeah, so you can go and prosecute.
I think they'll appoint you, will they?
Yeah, if anyway. He appointed me to be a private attorney general, then I'd prosecute him.
But anyway, that's really the way it's done. And so basically you're still bowing to their system in one shape or fashion by doing that.
Yeah. Well, look, this guy's got good intentions, though, and I think he just, didn't dig deep enough and get
Well, if he could get a judge to appoint him, that's great.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Well,
the same thing with David Strait, though. I mean, again, he's got good intentions. He's right on mark on everything he says. His problem is his process, the way he's going about the solution. Okay, that's the problem, you know. So, remember that guy that came to the meeting, it was a Ron Paul meeting way back when, and he was coming and preaching and teaching, becoming he didn't call it a sovereign citizen, but that's what is referred to, and gave up his license, but he couldn't drive. He gave up his license and he wouldn't drive because he couldn't drive, because he was afraid to go to jail. So what good does it do anyway? And all it is pay, it gives them, you're really just letting them know that you are a big problem to them. I'm the guy, I'm doing this, and you go through all this process. So you're marked now. You're on a list for, you'll be the first ones that they'll come out for. So to me, that's, it's dangerous, very dangerous. Look, let's take this nation back by using the law.
Well, that's you also got to be happy with being in court every month. Listen, Bagnarik did it, and he was so good at the Constitution, he won all his cases, and so he got away with driving.
Yeah, but you know what?
But
he
just county.
But he just lived. But he didn't go and give up his license and give up this and give up that. He just lived as a free man. That's all he did.
Well,
okay.
He put cardboard plates on his car. That's going to get you pulled over almost every day.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
Until they got to know him, and they said, don't pull him over. He's a pain in the neck. He's within his rights. Leave him alone.
Yeah.
That's only in his local area. The minute he leaves his county or his state, he's out in the jungle again, and he's got to do the case all over again.
Right.
But anyway.
Well, that's interesting. But I know he didn't go through all that other stuff. That's the point, though. You know, why go through all those things? I got a driver's license. I don't have to have a driver's license by law, but I got one. And my opinion or position on that is, in case I want to get involved with commercial activity, I got a license. See, that's that. You know, and from time, well, it's been a while, but I have driven truck here or this, that, there, and used a commercial, I drove a cab some years back, too, so. But anyway. All right, we're ready to take some questions here?
Yeah.
Okay, you got the control, so.
Let me see if it works.
Don't hit the wrong button.
I would never do that.
Take it very slow.
Okay, we got, who's that, Steven? No, it didn't.
Yeah, Steven was there. I don't know what happened to him.
No, he's there, but it looks like. It unmuted Hashid Ha. I.
Oh,
someone from Hawaii. Yes.
Hawaii. Hawaii. Yeah.
Hawaii.
You can call me Xander. Hi. There's something I wanted to clarify. We had a really great class meeting on Saturday. Thank you so much for that and just for all of your commitment to righteousness and justice. And I'm just so moved by the fact that this is rooted deeply in the Word of God. And one of the things that I wanted to kind of speak to, I have a court case that I'm dealing with, and one of the things I find when people talk about, say, things like devolution or Trump coming back is that it's, to some extent, it seems almost like it's putting people in a place of like, well, I don't want to come up, I don't want to rise up and come up against injustice or unrighteousness because, you know, something might be coming around the corner and I might be putting myself in harm's way unnecessarily. And I just want to emphasize that, you know, in my case, I've been given several opportunities to dismiss the charges, but I believe wholeheartedly in that our rights come from God and that the Constitution, it, as you said, I believe that it's corrupted. It's not broken, it's corrupted. And the only way, as you said, we restore that is to stand firmly on who we are as children of God and that those rights come from God and that we over and over again go into these different situations and we espouse that unrelentingly. And so I guess what I want to just encourage is that these committees of safety, you know, I just want to say I've gotten into sort of a lot of trouble because I have just stood on righteousness and justice. Because if you look at Jeremiah 22:3-5, it says, "Thus says the Lord, do justice and righteousness, and deliver from the hand of the oppressor him who has been robbed, and do no wrong or violence to the resident alien, the fatherless, and the widow, nor shed innocent blood in this place. For if you indeed will indeed obey this word, then there shall enter the gates of this house kings who sit on the throne of David, riding in chariots and on horses, they and their servants and their people. But if you will not obey these words, I swear by myself, declares the Lord, that this house shall become a desolation." And so I guess I want to really encourage you and anyone else that Martin Luther King said it so beautifully, there is never a wrong time to do the right thing. And when we stand up to something, we don't know what's going to happen to us. Some people get thrown in jail. If you look at Jacqueline Berger's testimony before the House Oversight Committee in Arizona, which was, you know, you have it on your email this week. It's so powerful. I listened to the whole 45 minutes. But she talks about how there was an assassination attempt at of Carrie Lake's daughter. There were six assassination attempts to, I forget the lawyer's name, it starts with an F, the last name starts with an F. And then here's this Jacqueline Berger that goes in. God knows what's going to happen to her. The truth is we don't know, but I just want to encourage everybody, there's never a wrong time to do the right thing. And our treasures are in heaven. And I don't say that in the sense of like that, you know, that's the only place we're going to get, you know, our justice. We could get it here, but we also could get thrown in jail, just like Paul did, because we stood up and we were willing to be persecuted and possibly prosecuted for the sake of the gospel and for justice, this justice and righteousness. So I just want to make sure, you know, just say that I think at some point during the class, John, you had said something like, you know, if people just want to get involved, all it takes is a little bit of your time. I just want to say, just, you know, being someone that has been thrown in jail, you know, completely unjustly, and I know it, and everyone knows it, and they know it. You know, I have had to go really deep into those scriptures and go, you know, back to James. I think it's, I won't read the whole thing, but James 1:2-4, consider it pure joy whenever you face trials of any kind, because the testing of your faith produces perseverance. let the perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. And so when I listen to other people's stories in these classes or in these group sessions, almost everyone has a story of injustice. And it's because of that injustice that they are like going, hey, I don't want this for my community. I don't want this for the future generations. I don't want this because I don't want to stand before God and not hear him say, well done, good and faithful servant. So I guess what I'm saying is I just want to make sure that, you know, I don't know. It sounds like with your cases, you know, they haven't come after you, and that's awesome. You know,
one of the things that, you know, I just rest in, you know, because is where God says that he will not, to the believer, he will not put upon us anything more than that we can bear. So I just trust in that. And so we got to be careful in what we do, though. We just have to be within the law no matter what. You know, we're so rock solid. I believe National Liberty Alliance is so rock solid in the law, in the natural law particularly. But we're so rock solid in the law, our constitution, who we are as a people, our heritage. You know, we're very careful not to be misinterpreted, I think. And if we run into a situation where someone makes a certain claim or makes a certain statement or something, you know, we might do like if you go underneath our welcome tab, for instance, we might do a disclaimer. So we've done disclaimers in order to make the record straight. Okay, so, but yeah, look, at as far as I'm concerned, you know, that's what I do, is I just rest in the fact that God will not put anything upon me more than I can bear, and all things work together for good to those who believe. So people should not look at, and there's this power and there's safety in numbers. It is true there are certain areas that might be more problematic, you know, than most areas. You know, California has gone real wacky, for instance, you know, but generally speaking, you know, Washington, D.C. problem back in January 6th, that was a major, major problem, and a lot of people got lost into that, and that was a shame. But again, we just got to be careful and do what we have to do, because the bottom line is, not that I'm any braver a guy or anything, but nevertheless, I still appreciate to give me liberty or give me death. You know, we have to sit, we have to stand on that. We have to put the line in. And remember, they're not just going up against us. It's not that God is on our side. God forbid, you know, that's not the case. We're on God's side. That's the key. And the thing is that we made a covenant with God. We are a natural law nation, the only one in the world. We are the only natural law republic, and we're based on the Bible. And even God has told us, if my people who call by my name shall humble themselves and pray and turn from their wicked ways, I will hear their prayers and heal their land, and so on. So, you know, anyway. I don't think we have much to worry about, in my opinion. So,
yeah, no, I'm not saying that you're not doing it right. I think we need to respect the fact that, you know, we don't even know with the movement, like JFK got assassinated. You know, it's like, we just don't know. Martin Luther King got assassinated. I'm not saying that people, you know,
well, they've got too many problems right now to deal with than to deal with someone like me at this point, I think, and a lot of things that most of us do. I mean, they got a lot of problems right now. They're being beat up from every angle. They're a rat caught in the corner, and so now is the time for people to rise up, in my opinion.
Well, yeah, and I think like I said, I would just emphasize what Martin Luther King Jr. said. There is never a wrong time to do the right thing. And I think when we're motivated by righteousness, you know, only God knows the outcome. And just like no one would look at Martin Luther King getting assassinated and go, oh, that was a loss. No, that was God's plan for whatever reason for his life. And,
right.
You know, yeah. So,
You know, there was a time of martyrism, and martyrism played a role in really bringing forward the truth. And I think Martin Luther King was part of that. In a lot of times, but generally speaking, you know, most of the apostles, they suffered horrible deaths, and they were martyred, and a lot of people back in those days, And that built up the, you know, Christianity even stronger, you know?
Right. Wasn't it the Roman prelate that said that we got to make sure Jesus' body doesn't get stole out of here because he's going to be more popular in death?
Yeah. Than yeah, that's not in the Bible to my knowledge, but let me think about that.
Yeah, I think that's why he put the guards at the
door.
Well,
yeah, you're right. Yes, yes. The idea was there.
He said they're going to steal his body and they're going to say he rose because he preached it before he died.
Yeah, you're paraphrasing a little bit, but that is definitely in the Bible. I recall it now, yes.
Right. And he said he's going to rebuild the temple, and I think these guys understood that he wasn't talking about the temple. He was talking about his body.
Uh-huh.
And they said, oh, if they steal his body, we're going to be in trouble. How do you fight a ghost? You know? So it's true, you know. Some people's causes, just like Lavoie Finicum, he became more powerful in death than he was in life even.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes that's the case. So
and I just want to say, having been someone who has been prosecuted and persecuted, I can just say from experience, it's gotten to the point where I don't even know how to live life any other way. It is so inspiring to just know that the outcome is completely up to God, but just to know that I will be able to stand before God and know that I never said no. You know, if he asked me to do something, I'll do it. And it may go against everything that could bring me, you know, the things in this life that I might want, but I will have chosen righteousness and justice. And, you know, like I said, I feel like I will hear him say, well done, good and faithful servant. So I think with the committees of safety, you know, I think I just want to sort of emphasize, like, there's a little bit of danger that's going to be involved with that, possibly. And just like you
with
said,
the committees of safety?
Saturday, what's that?
I don't think there'll be much danger in the committees of safety. And again, remember, the committees of safety in the beginning, they're only going to be able to do so much because they have to build it. And it's going to take time to build it and go through all the process and learn. I mean, and people working together, some people will specialize in this, some people will specialize in that. They'll get this committee going. Really, you're working on the local level. And again, I think these people are in so much trouble and being attacked by so many different directions, and nothing is working for them anymore. They're being revealed. I don't think they have time to worry about us at our levels. I think they got too many problems where they're at. So, but in any event, I think committees of safety is really the safest way to be. That's why it's called the Committee of Safety. And when you get your sheriff on the side, there's nobody going to bother you. And that's the key, and that's the first order of business we teach people in order to create a committee of safety. The first person you want to pull in, and there's a process to do that. You have to prime everything, prime your sheriff, get them on board and become part of your committee of safety. Attend the meetings or send a deputy and keep them informed on what you're doing. Giving them a copy of all of your paperwork, you know, of who we are and what you're all about. So once you have the sheriff on your side, and especially you get two or three counties in the same general area working, or even in the same state, you know, they're backing each other up because sheriffs need also other sheriffs working with them to be in a safety zone. So I think committees of safety in a very, very powerful position, because remember, if you have a sheriff that's becoming educated, and that's part of the process what we're doing here, is educating the sheriff, you have a sheriff that gets educated and they understand who they are and their power and their authority. They are the top law enforcer of that county. There's nobody above that individual as far as the law is concerned. And when a federal agent comes into his county, you know, he's going to want to see paperwork and want to see authority. And he can refuse if it's unlawful. Even if there was a judge's signature on it, he could refuse it if it's unlawful. Once a sheriff understands that power and that authority, now you got something. And that's what every sheriff needs to get to. That's why we have the campaign.
I believe in 100% in everything you're saying and the philosophy behind it. I just think whenever you are going into, and you mentioned Saturday, you know, we're headed into World War III. And there is that period, you know, where you're going up against this machine, and they're not necessarily just going to, you know, bow down and give it back. So what we're seeing in Hawaii, people just get thrown in jail. People get killed. You know, and we are one of two states that doesn't have an elected sheriff. We have an appointed sheriff, and they're working hand in hand with the corruption that runs all the way from the police departments to the courtrooms. So my case or the situation here might be more extreme, but I'm more just letting people know. Sometimes you have to just do it because it really is the right thing, and trust God with the ultimate outcome, and know that, like, at the end of the day, you know, doing the right thing is always the right thing.
No, I appreciate that. All right, we got to move on to the next person. We've got quite a few people
Absolutely.
In the queue. So appreciate the call.
Yeah, thank you.
All right.
Absolutely.
Gerard, you got the controls? I think you've taken them, right? Go ahead.
Let me see. Steven, go ahead. You've been
I don't see Steven. I saw him before, but I don't see him.
He's there, but it doesn't look like I can unmute him. I don't get it. All right, let me try.
Just hit the next question thing, and it'll work through. I think Steven's a ghost. I don't know, because I don't see him.
It's me.
Yeah, it jumped down to Kathy.
It's Kathy. Okay.
Yeah.
How do I unmute myself?
You are unmuted.
Star 6-1.
We hear you.
You're good.
We hear you, Kathy. You're good.
She doesn't realize.
Well you were good. She muted herself.
Is that what happened?
I think so.
Now can you hear me? Okay. Thank you.
Well, we're good. Go ahead.
All right. I'm really concerned because my friend John and I, who live in the same household, we signed up for the course on Saturday. We didn't receive any way to log in. I called Terry on Saturday, right when the course was beginning. She told me to call Jan. She said Jan has more information available. I called Jan, and Jan never returned my call. I sent him text messages. I left him a voicemail message. And I really, really, really need to take this course. We do. John and I do.
One of the problems, you know, once we get the course, and we've done everything we could to get all of the necessary information out, and I sent out, maybe you got misput being, you know, checked off so you didn't get the message. I don't know. But I've sent out that message at least once a day for 3 days. And I think on Friday, twice, I did send on the morning and the evening, and then again on a Saturday morning. But once we got the program going, it's difficult because Jan was busy working in the program. I was busy. Even Terry was. So, you know, I'm surprised she was able to, you know, spend the time with you. But send me to mail, mail at nationallibertyalliance.org. Send a email. And just give us your name and your phone number and your username, and then we'll respond back to you and make sure you can get in. Now, when you come in, and you come in on an app or you come in on the browser, you have to put the access code to get into the room, which is NLA. Okay, that's the access code to the room. But then there's a security code that you have to put in, which is 4 numbers, and we'll send you that if you don't have it. And that you put in order to get into the room, because it's a private room, and only the people who have, sent the paperwork in to us as far as the application is concerned. Now, you can watch, we've got the whole thing uploaded already. Matter of fact, it's on Rumble also. I put the first, part of our course, you know, as far as the first session is concerned, which was Introduction Part A, and which was quite long. But in any event, we put that up on Rumble, so you can get up on Rumble and see it. And look on your webpage on our site and go to Education Starts Here. Come down to Court Access and the Common Law and look to the right. If you see these two pages, Court Access Documents and Forms and Court Access Recorded Video Course, if you don't see those two things, then you didn't get the email. You wouldn't really put into the system. So, do you see those things?
Well, I know we didn't get the email. I sent in pictures of our applications. Sent in a picture of our check.
Okay, listen. Send in. You can go to Rumble, okay? And you can see the. Let me click on this here. Right here, you can see the entire course that we had for Saturday. I put the first one up. It's the only one that I'm making available to anyone everywhere. We put it up on Rumble. All of our members have been notified of this. So you can go and watch, but you'll get exactly everything that everyone else got. The only difference is you don't have it live and there's no open forum for you, but there's here. You got an open forum here if you have any questions. But you'll be in next week. You can ask any question you want at the end of the session because we'll do an open forum. But you can get everything here and catch up and then be live for next Saturday. Just send your information to mail, M-A-I-L, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Just tell us your username and your phone number and your name, and then we'll look you up and find your application and make sure you get checked off. I did get a lot of late papers that came in on Saturday, Friday night or Saturday morning. I don't know if they got into the system or not. So, you know.
I think I mailed the check on the 14th, like at 4 o'clock in the morning. So,
yeah. Well, somewhere something went wrong, but we'll fix it. And, okay. You know, you can get, like I said, you can listen to the program. It's exactly the way it would be if you were there. You know, we don't have any conversation during it, during the session, but only at the end is an open forum. And you'll get to hear that open
forum.
So. Yeah, John.
We really have concerns because I've got a hearing on Wednesday, the 1st of March, and I heard you tell the other caller that I should tell the court that I need to get some counsel and that will buy me some time.
Buy time. That's what you want to do.
Okay.
So, you'll learn other things. Hold on a minute, but Jan wanted to say something. Go ahead, Jan. Yeah,
I think there's a problem with your email. I have sent you 3 announcements plus 2 emails explaining what the problem is. John probably sent you 5 or 6. When I go to the website and look up your My Account, I can find a name, but the account is empty. Now, that sometimes happens when you sign up your account and you don't click the form for whether or not you're a government employee. If you don't get each and every item in the whole application filled out, it'll bomb.
No, I did. I even got an email back from John the next day saying that my account was created.
Well, if you got it from John, it's not the right one.
Well, she probably got the automatic one. It didn't come from me personally.
I got the automatic one then that says it's whatever yes, mail.
Then you go through the approval, right, Jan?
Yeah, but, John, there's nothing in her account.
Why don't we, John,
other people, there was one other person that had that issue, and I just had them go through and re-sign up. I don't care if you use
a
different name. Or anything, but sign up and make sure that you have everything filled out and that it accepts it. Then it's just a matter of clicking a box when I get it.
Hold on a minute. Why don't we delete her account and then let her just come sign in? Or do you think she needs to sign in altogether in a different way? I mean, if her name's already in there and a phone number and address, will that connect?
We can delete what's there, and she can just redo it, and that's fine. That's what we did with the other case.
That's what we should do then. Okay, become a member again, that's all, and Jan will delete the old one, and make sure you answer all the questions, and then you'll get an email telling you we got it, and that someone will get back to you as soon as you're approved, that Jan will go through the approval process, and that usually takes a day, but he'll do it as quick as he can. And then as soon as that happens, we'll send you an email with the code to get into the call. And anybody that wants to join up and at any given time and get in, don't wait till the last minute to try to get into the call. You have to go up there and make sure you can get into the room, make sure you've got all the information you know how to do. Even though there's no code being asked at a regular time, the code is only required. The last code is only required. The access code is only required on Saturday mornings. Any other time, our room is always open. So you should be able to get in there. There'll be nobody else in there, but you can get in there and say, okay, I can get into the room. Everything's working right. Now all I have to do is put that code in because I won't be able to get in until I put the access code in once you go through that process on a Saturday morning. And come in 10 minutes early so that maybe there's still some time if there's a problem that we can help. But once the course gets going, it's difficult. I don't pay attention to anything anywhere. I'm just in the course, and you know, so I have no idea what's going on in the world until the course is over.
I just wish Jan would have returned my phone call like I asked him to do.
Jan, did you want to say something else, or are we done?
No, we're done. You just, I'll go ahead and delete your account, and then you can redo it. The reason I didn't return your call, the last week has been very difficult, and during the first call on Saturday, I spent 3 hours trying to get different people on that had different little issues. So I've been.
Oh, I got a lot going on, too. My husband was murdered on the 12th, and he's sitting there in a mortuary somewhere, and I got 10,000 things to worry about, so.
Yeah, we're sorry to hear that, that's for sure. All right, well, look, we're going to do what we can for you. We'll get you in. Jan will delete that account that you have there, sign up. Let's get a new account, and by tomorrow we should be able to get everything maybe straightened up and get the code for you for next Saturday. Listen to the video that we recorded, and we'll go from there. And if you have any questions or concerns, you can bring them up on the next open forum at the next course, which will be introduction part B.
Okay, I'll do that now, and you can sign up in about 10 minutes, okay?
Thank you. Thank you, right. Jan. Bye-bye.
Right. Okay, Gerard, you got the clicker there?
Okay.
Go to the next person.
Yep. It looks like that's Brent from Wisconsin. That's not our Brent, is it?
No, that's not Brent. It's Brett.
Oh, Brett.
No N there. He's got a T instead of an N.
I got to put my glasses on.
There you go. Get your readers on.
But I don't hear him.
Brett from Wisconsin, you got the mic.
Hello?
Yep.
There you go.
How you doing?
Hi, how you doing? My question is I've done a jurisdiction challenge. I put in the forms, but they went ignored, and
yeah,
the
that's
case
what they do.
Was moved to pretrial. So, I mean,
well, then there's a next step to make, and you know, look at you appeal that immediately. You write you do the appeal. Now, if you don't know how to do appeal, you know, that becomes another problem, and you know, are you in the course?
I am.
Okay, so on this next Saturday, when we go into open forum, I'll show you a couple of things about an appeal. Well, maybe I could do that right now. Let's see, education starts here, come over here, documents. Okay, there. You know where I'm at on this page? Education starts here.
I'm actually driving, so.
Okay, well, anyway, under education starts here, you come down to court access and the common law, which is the place where you filled out your application. And next to that, you'll see two pages that'll open up because you're in the course. People who aren't in the course won't see these pages. So if you click on the documents and forms, okay, you could try to struggle your way through by coming down into motions or appeals, and you can appeal. You know, you challenge jurisdiction, they ignored it. First thing I would do is file a quo warranto, which requires their oath, their bonds, and their financials. And at the same time, I'd appeal their decision that because the law requires a jurisdiction be put onto every paper in the court. And that's the law, okay? So you take that to his boss, which is the appellate court up. And if you have to go up again another level, you go up another level. Again, you know, there's way too much to explain if you don't have basic knowledge of how the court works. And so anybody taking this course, when you do have a problem with a question, I can answer the problem or the question relatively quickly, and you can get it because you have enough structure, enough understand, enough framework of what's going on to deal with the problem and get the right paper. But you can go in here. Let me see where it is, the defenses, motions, affidavits, cause of actions. Let's see, motions, forms, memorandums. I think it's down below. Ready for trial. Appeal. It's all the way down, Chapter 9, Appeal and Enforcement and Extraordinary Writs. So you'd want to click on the appeal, and it's a pretty simple process. It gives you step-by-step how to do a repeal. Under Rule 18, it's their rule, okay, appeal from a United States District Court. So that'll give you some basic information to go through the appeal. Let's see what else is here. A notice of appeal in tax court. Notice of appeal to a court of appeals from a judgment of the district court. So that's probably what you want to do there, because they made a judgment that they're not going to answer you. let's see. Notice of appeal to a court of appeals from an appealable order of the district court. Well, that's not the case. So I'd go on this one here, and you'll get the form to be able to fill out. This is the form. It's a very simple form, and you're just appealing. And you tell them what it is you're appealing. You asked that they give you the jurisdiction you're in. If you're in, are you in a federal court?
No, this is municipal. So okay. They moved the case.
Bear in mind, everything in federal court can be used in any other court. Okay, and you know, things are a little different in the process, but it doesn't matter. It's all the same, you know, a little different, tweaked, a little different here or there. And so we're teaching on a federal level, of course, because we can't teach on all 50 state levels. But just this paper right here is a notice of appeal of a court of appeals from a judgment of a district court. And basically, you're going to write it up in such a way to make the note that they made the decision not to tell you what jurisdiction you're in. So, anyway, that's the best I can tell you for right now. And you have access to a lot of stuff. You can try to puzzle your way through, you know, in head of us. Let me see. You know, again, there's a lot of stuff you can look into right here in the appeal, but also motions. Well, you don't need to do motions, but you did do a challenge of jurisdiction, and I presume you use our paperwork to some degree. So, again, that's the best I could do for you right now. Anything else?
If jurisdiction is going to show up on their paperwork, what would that look like?
Well, is this a civil case or a criminal case?
That's what's unsure. It's a damage to property by a minor child.
Yeah, I remember with the phone.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Look, it's ridiculous. You didn't bring your daughter in, did you? To the court?
No.
Okay, yeah, don't do that. Yeah, you need to move this to federal court for cause immediately. That's what you need to do. And you have to understand what that means, okay? Ask your question on Saturday about moving your case to federal court for cause, and I'll go through some paperwork. Well, let me see what I can find here. I think we have something in here. Matter of fact, I'm sure we do. There's still some more things I'm putting in on, because I've still not finished a couple of things I want to put on the end of this, in the later part of this course. But moving for cause, it should be under, I think, case examples. Okay, so move for cause right here. Moving your case, federal court for cause. Remember, when you move your case to federal court for cause, you don't discuss the situation, the problem, or whatever thing that's in there. You're going in there for lack of due process. That's your cause. It's a violation of your unalienable right of due process, and that's the only thing you're going to talk about, the only thing you're going to argue, and in your wherefore clause, you're going to tell them that you want them to cease and desist. Okay? That's what you want. And if you want some money, ask for some money, too. I usually use $1,000, face value, Morgan, silver dollars. Okay, right here. It's very simple. Just fill this thing out. Removal for cause and file it with the federal court. Move it on.
Okay, and on Saturday when I ask them the questions, should I ask at the end of everything, after you go through everything, or?
Well, once we're done with regular, questions and answers, and I shut the recorder off and people can leave or they could stay if they want, that's when we'll talk about it.
Okay.
Okay, but this is what you want to go study and see right now and see if you can't work through it.
Okay.
You know, last Monday, we got into subjects we shouldn't have gotten into because we've got to stay on point on the course. And it's the same thing here. I don't want to get people, lost in things when they're focusing in on learning. But after we shut the recorder off, we can spend some time.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, Gerard.
Okay. We got, I'm going to click it and see who goes. I never know here. Okay, it looks like,
973, yeah. Is that it? 973 number?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
I can.
Yeah, what's your first name and your state?
Okay, my first name is Sakila, and my state is New Jersey.
How you doing? We spoke before. Go ahead.
We're neighbors.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I'm calling in regards to having a Navient student loan, and currently I'm unemployed, and I have read the book on Straw Man in regards to the debt part of it, so I sent them a validation letter, and they neglected to send me the registered documents back in the mail. They just sent it regular mail, but they didn't send me all of the documents. Now they've messed up my credit report, and now they're saying that I have by the 28th to make a decision, or they're saying I'm in default and sending me to litigation. So my question to you is, what more information can I get to read up on that, or can I speak to somebody about that, or is it too late because they're getting ready to take me into litigation or into default?
And the litigation is for what?
Because they claim that I owe them student loan money.
No,
the loan was actually taken out with Sallie Mae. But Navient is the...
All right, well, look, what you need to do is this, okay? You need to take the course if you're not taking the course, number one. Number two, you want to buy time. You tell them that you need counsel and you need more time. And you do the same thing that I told someone else earlier. If you weren't here and didn't hear that, you can go listen to the recording. We have the recordings up under our welcome tab. Not under our welcome, I'm sorry. Hold on. I got to get all the way up to the top. Okay, under our, let me think where this is at.
Go to sleep.
Yeah, I feel like I'm going to sleep. Weekly call, I think we have it. No, it's not there. All right, anyway, you're going to have to bite for time. That's your key thing. That's step one, tell them you need to get counsel and you need time. And they'll probably you ask for 30. They'll ask how much time you want. Say 30 days. Okay, that'll give you a couple of weeks to start working through some things. And if you're in the course, we can talk a little more after we shut the recording off on Saturday. Okay.
Okay.
All right. And anybody else that has that kind of a problem, you know, we can talk on Saturday after the course is done and we shut the recorder off. We can spend time, and anybody wants to hang out and listen, that's fine, or whatever. But at least we'll get to the end of the course. I don't want to discuss cases, and I did get involved last Saturday on that, and I got to just remember not to do that. So anyway, Gerard, next person.
You done?
Yeah.
Okay, it looks like David.
Yep.
From Hawaii. Aloha.
Yeah, definitely. Talked to you on at the meeting. So I got a couple questions. Number one, you know, we started our common law assembly, went through the whole process here. Now, I noticed that you call these committees of safety. So what's the difference there?
What did you call it now? You started, what's it called? What are you calling it?
Well, ours is actually called the Quad General Jural Assembly. It's a common law.
Jural Assembly is something different than what we're doing. Is Jural Assembly sounds like something to do with the jury, and you're trying to bring together a jury, a grand jury, or a trial jury, or something. I mean, it sounds like a grand jury, maybe, the Jural Assembly. We teach people. We're teaching people how to take control of that, but we do have a process, and there's an education required. Specific, you got to take all of our courses to become what's called an administrator. And we got four administrators and one paralegal that we're trying to develop in every county. And so in every state court, which is a state court in every county, you'd have the people who would come in, and they would be the people who would orientate the jury and bring them together. Now, we have the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, which is the only jury we have active, and the sole purpose and focus of that jury is to deal with the enemies, both foreign and domestic. And those are the only things we're dealing with at this point in time. We have some court cases that we've been building up on and running it through that process. But nevertheless, We are doing a grand jury only on that level for enemies, foreign and domestic. And that jury will continue in its process until we finish with that problem, and then we'll dismantle. Because you can't have a jury that just runs all the time. That's unlawful. It's unjust. It's not natural law. It's a problem. So when you have a jural thing, if that's what it is, if it's a jury, a grand jury or something, and it's indefinite, that's unlawful in common law.
Well, that's not how it operates, though.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know that. I'm just looking at the name, so I don't know.
Common law assembly, the way it works is that you have a common law assembly that addresses matters, and when you put together the grand jury, you pick through lottery, or you have people even from the general public.
But the grand jury runs under the auspices of the court. Okay, and if you can't get under the auspices of the court, you can come together in tents outside the court, so to speak, is what we've done. But again, I don't know that you really want to get involved in all kinds of cases and trying to do indictments and things out. It's just going to run into problems. We have to do it in a certain way, in a proper way, and get into the court system. And that's what we're working on, is getting people into the court system. Well, we're building committees of safety. Now, committees of safety will have a judiciary committee, they'll have a political committee, they have an educational committee, they have a committee for numerous things. And each one of those committees will look at the problems, establish the problems, look for solutions, put things together, and come to some conclusions, and then bring it to the full committee for a final decision, and then go forward to deal with the problem. You know, one of the problems is education. So you want to deal with the problems of education in every school, within, you know, all the district schools within the county, at every level. And that's going to take time, but that's what they're going to be doing. That's the work that they're going to be doing. Now, the judiciary committee really will deal with problems where people have a problem maybe with a criminal act against them, or some kind of a situation where there is the concern of a criminal problem, or trying to deal with an individual in government that's not giving them the things that they should be giving them, you know, the bureaucrat that's blocking them from something or not doing their job. Well, then they could come to that group, and then they can advise you to go over to. Hopefully, at that point in time, we'll have, as time goes on, of course, we'll have the administrators. They would advise you to go talk to the administrators, and the administrators could then try to solve the problem. That would be the administrators of the jury administrators. Now, they would be working in the courthouse, and that's what we're battling to do, is get the people to take control of the justice system, because clearly they can't do it. And also natural law, common law doesn't permit for a government to run that. That has to be run by the people.
That's why I'm confused. I'm confused with what you're saying there, because we're the ones who are the authority.
Right.
And as common law, we're the ones who call the shots.
Right.
So why we would have to go to the de facto system,
No. We're taking it back. That's the point. We need to be operating in the courts. Those people need to step aside. That's what we're fighting for right now, to get the people into the court. Okay.
So
now
that's what we're doing. We're putting together.
The problem is, what kind of an education do you have in order to run this process?
That's what we're trying to learn.
Okay, well, that's what we're teaching here, and there's a lot of courses to take if that's what you're doing. We have seven courses altogether, the one course we have going is a live course. Anybody going in to become an administrator has to take all those courses. You have to understand the court process, the system, how things work. You have to understand how the pleading system goes, you know, everything, the motions. You have to understand, common law. You have to understand what can be used as far as the codes. The codes are valid, at least most codes are valid. Some of them are not valid. You have to be able to see which ones are not valid, because they don't add up to common law. You know, they violate something. But in any event, you know, if it's a situation where a person is working for a government or in commercial activity, the codes apply to them. Okay, you have to understand the difference between law and equity. So anybody taking those positions need a high education. And it would be a wrongdoing for us here at National Liberty Alliance to assist anyone to get into that system and not make sure that they're qualified. Now, of course, you know, we're all in the school of hard knocks and we're all learning. And if we get in and we don't have enough people educated, you know, people can go in and continue their education, but hopefully there'll be one person or we'll have to give them, you know, advice. It'd just be a wrongdoing to help someone to do something if they're not qualified to do it. Because, of course, more
I agree. Well, I'm in absolute agreement with you. Our goal is to get as much education as possible. What I was trying to understand, because I understand the slight differences between you and the group out of Michigan, and they have common law assemblies, and you call committees of safety. So I was trying to understand the difference there, number one.
I don't know what a common law assembly is, though. I mean, I don't know I don't know what's involved with that. I can only guess.
Yeah, well, a common law assembly would be people coming together to create a common law assembly where they have a court.
Yeah, well, what do they know about the common law? What do they know about our heritage? What do they know about the Federalist Papers and the interpretation of the Constitution properly? What do they know about a proper, you know, law that is valid versus invalid law in equity? I mean, do they know that they have that knowledge? Because if they don't, you know, again, I don't know where they're going with it.
Well, the whole point is we take a dual covenant of office, oath, and it has to do with, we're supposed to judge all matters impartially under the law.
But who's educating them? Where do they get their education?
Where are we getting our education?
We're trying to pick it up
from people that know, like you.
Okay, well, that may be the problem. But I'll tell you what, why don't you talk to your group? Listen, why don't you talk to your group and come out here and take a look to see what we're doing, and maybe you can structure yourself the way we're structured. And then we can assist you at the same time, because you will become a committee of safety. You look at the committee of safety is the proper name for this whole system as far as taking back the whole thing, because this is what our founding fathers did. They formed committees of safety. A matter of fact, you know, going back before we even became a nation, they operated through committees of safety. It was the Committee of Safety who brought forth ultimately the Declaration of Independence. It was the Committee of Safety that brought forth everything that we've done in order to create a nation. Our founding fathers, all of them, belonged to committees of safety within their own colonies. Okay. So that's the way to go, and come in and take a look and get an education here and do what you got to do. You know,
one very specific question I have is, you have, what is the definition per the forefathers, Fifth Amendment, due process?
What is the definition of due process?
Yeah, the forefathers' definition.
Well, ultimately,
you can't be convicted unless you're entitled to due process under the law. What is due process under the law?
Yeah, hang on.
I can conjure up in my mind what I think is.
Yeah,
right.
Hang on one second.
I'd like to know the
hang on a second. I just got to take this call. I'm sorry. Hang on.
I'll call you in a few minutes. I'm getting off, all right? All right.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Gerard, did you take that, or should I just finish up on this? Due process ultimately is your right to be heard and to face your accuser, to go through a process of law through a court of record. That's what due process is. It's a proper jurisdiction, ultimately. The right to be heard and the right to face your accusers and so on. The right to use the court system and then for them to be obedient to the law, and you apply the law as you know it, however you have to. But due process is going through a court system, ultimately.
And do we have any historical documents to establish that is what they're... That was what their definition was.
I'm sorry, say that again?
Do we have any historical documents to establish that that is the definition of meant by that phrase?
Yeah, well, you can go up and take a look at the, and let me see if I can pull it together real quick here. You go to dictionaries, we have them up here on our court, our court course. Black's Law, we'll use the fourth edition, and we'll run through due process.
Black's Law.
So we're looking at due process. Huh?
That's fourth edition.
Yeah, that's what I'm in, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, fourth edition is a good edition, in my opinion. Okay, I got to get back to D, because there's a lot of places where due process comes in. Let me click there, and due process, go down to the next one, due process. Due course of law, this phrase is synonymous with due process of law, the law of the land, and the general definition thereof is the law in its regular course of administration through courts of justice. And while not always necessarily confined to judicial proceedings, yet these words have such a significance when used to designate the kind of an eviction or ouster from real estate by which party is deposed, as to a prelude, and so on and so forth. But generally speaking, it's law through a court of law, due process. Let me read the basic meaning here. Again, this phrase is synonymous. Due course of law is synonymous with due process of law, or the law of the land, and the general definition thereof is law in its regular course of administration through courts of justice. That's the definition.
Thank you very much. I appreciate all your input.
And look at talk.
I'm gonna let you go because I know you're busy.
Okay, listen. Talk to your group of people, and come in and take a look at what we're doing on the teaching people the committees of safety. And if you connect back with me, if they're interested, we can get together. I can talk to the entire group, and we can talk about it, and we can assist you in any way we can. But we do want to make sure that anybody we help is really getting educated in certain areas. If you're going to be dealing with the court system, you have to be educated. In the committees of safety, you don't have to have a specific education, because really it's a committee working on problems, trying to solve the problems, putting things together, and working with other committees of safety, and so on and so forth. So, but again,
that's what we're trying to do. So if you can give us the best guidance, I mean, we're trying to get educated. We came together because we want to get back to the Republic. We're not
trying to
be arrogant. None of us claim to know anything.
Get your group together and then get back to me, and we'll get a date. We'll get together and we'll talk.
All right. Sounds good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay. Have a good one. Thanks.
All right, you too. I got to get going, Gerard. You got one other caller. You want to take it?
Yeah, I'll take it.
All right, I got to go.
Okay. It says wireless caller. 870, go ahead. You're unmuted. Hello?
Hey, this is Jeremy in Arkansas, and I had a question for John. Obviously, he hopped off. But I was kind of looking at, I've been studying Bill Thornton's process with courts of record for a while now, probably about a year. And I was wanting to know what the major differences between John's process. I've also read his book as well, and I'm in the course. But what would be the biggest differences he would say, or you guys would say, would be that between Bill's process and the proposed process through John's book or the NLA?
I'll tell you the major difference that in my mind with Bill Thornton. And Bill Thornton was kind of a mentor of ours. We started with him. But Bill doesn't acknowledge that God is king of the court. He thinks, he's putting it on a man thing, that you're king of the court. Ultimately, we don't have the authority. We get the authority from God, God of nature and nature's God. And he doesn't push that very much, He's basically says it's all about you, and I do believe that that's the major difference between us and Bill Thornton, as far as in my mind. And other,
so,
he's good. Bill Thornton's got real good, process and stuff. He taught us. We learned from him common law to begin with, and then we moved on further. But I think the main thing is he doesn't bring out the fact that these rights come from God, and that God is still king of the court, that there's no judge or man that's above that, you know. And even if, you know, even if you're the sovereign of the court, you're still under God's law. That's where it falls, you know.
Okay, so and I recognize that as well. I've had several conversations with other like-minded folks that see that as an issue. But as far as process, would you say that there's a big divergence between Bill's process of observing the way
so
that the court should flow?
It's been so long since I studied Bill, but no, I don't think there's a big, because it's all established and it's tradition, and lawyers learn from other lawyers. You know what I mean? And so that whole business of the process of court was something that developed through time, you know, and it's handed down and taught. You know, they don't even in law school, you get a bar license and stuff, you still don't know due process. You learn it as you do it. You know what I mean? That's common law.
Yeah.
You know, what's common to us as men. And that's why you want to stick with biblical principles, because it's too easy to go off into the weeds otherwise. You know what I mean? At least in my mind, that you need to put that up front. And we studied lots of different people along our path, and one of them was Carl Lentz. And Carl
Yep.
Lentz is very godly, but he's very, very to the point. And like when he was doing a case with children, he'd put a paper in that says, "I require the return of my property." And people say, "What do you mean your property?" Well, your children are your property, technically, you know. But he had a very
right.
cut to the quick, and he has a very godly outlook on law. And usually the judges cannot argue against him. He does pretty good, you know what I mean? You know,
I do. Thank you. I look forward to the lessons within the course. So good stuff. I'll go
okay.
on mute and let the next one.
Well, you're it, and it's after 11, so I'm going to say goodnight and thank you, and we'll see you here next week. Okay.
Thank you all. See you then.
Don't
Bye.
Miss the Saturday course. Okay.
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Bye.
Have a good night. Good. Very good. We'll see you next week. Let me shut the record.